Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with life coach Joel Elston and Alex King. Today is Thursday, April the 25th, 2019. It's 8 a.m. in New York. It's 5 a.m. in Los Angeles, 1 p.m. in London and Sydney, Australia. You're at around 10 p.m. Wherever you are in the world, thank you for joining us for another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And I am getting used to using this new Zoom platform for doing our podcast recording. And in fact, I just discovered a new way not to record. So, okay, here we go. All right, so we turn the recording on. It's a little bit late, you know. Hey, you know, I'm getting used to this thing. What can I say?
It's cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're off to a good start here now that we have a recording going. Joel, how you doing? We haven't talked in a week, but you sound like you're a bright and chipper this morning.
Yeah, things are well as they normally are. So we've had a great week, and it's hard to fit. I know I say this a lot, but you wake up all of a sudden it's Thursday, and you know, it's while I do enjoy our show and I wish it were more, it's like wow, here we are again. So life continues to go at a rapid pace, but in a very good, you know, in a very good sense.
Sometimes you need to have like a little bit of a reminder, like next step in your life coming up next, right? I mean, I guess it's what's scheduled. <for that. laughs> And Alex, how are you doing? I mean, I got a message from you yesterday saying that you made progress with our script for
I
the best dinner. So that sounds good. I got to go read that.
After the
podcast this morning. But yeah, well, you also put the pressure on because now I have to write my part.
Exactly. Well, the way I lined it up, it should seamlessly allow you to start off right where I left off.
Oh, cool. Okay. Well, I like that. I can do that.
Yeah.
Excellent. Now, I got to ask you, how many minutes did you write?
About 2.5, 3.5.
3.5. Okay. Well, this may be actually easier to merge in than we thought, but that's another story. We don't want to bore people with that because they don't know what we're talking about. So speaking of what we're talking about, what are we talking about today? We need to have a topic. We need to get started with something. So let's see.
I have a suggestion.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so social media, major thing. Yep. So I follow Will Smith on social media.
Okay.
And he has blown up. Like, he just started Instagram like maybe 6 months ago, and in his, it's so powerful and so amazing to watch, and the things he does and his turning 50 and all this stuff. And the other day he made a post about effortless manifestation.
Ooh.
Yeah. So he had this, I mean, it's Instagram, so you only get a minute to talk. But he's on this journey to figure out the difference between flowing with the river and fighting against the truth.
Ah, that's an Abraham concept right there.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's one of their more famous metaphorical story thingies where they describe upstream versus downstream.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're paddling upstream and you're working real hard because that's the direction you think that everything that you want is located. And what you don't realize is if you just let go of the oars and the boat started to turn around the current, it would take you right downstream to where everything is that you're actually wanting.
Right. We do talk about the flow of the river a lot.
Yeah. So that's the same concept. Now, mm-hmm. I'm wondering if he's an Abraham follower. That is an Abraham story.
I don't know. He doesn't bring it up, but that's just like, I don't know if he's trying to make it seem like, well, I'm trying to do this whole new thing, so this is my idea.
I don't know.
I just, you know, fell asleep and came up with this great idea.
Well, maybe he's channeling Abraham. I mean, that's what Esther's job is most of the time.
Who knows? Who knows?
But it's a good analogy, Joel, the upstream-downstream metaphor, because we do have a tendency to struggle so much, and we don't need to struggle so much as just letting go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's sort of the resistance that we've talked about. You know, a couple of weeks ago we mentioned that, you know, the desire is actually the resistance. You know, when you put so much energy and so much thought and when you think the manifesting is an effort on your part, it's really the lack of, you know, you almost can't believe you want something really bad without putting out the vision of you're lacking that.
Yeah.
So the effortless manifestation is, is living as if you're already there, but not giving any thought or concern to, okay, I'm going to get $1 million. I'm going to focus. I need $1 million. I'm going to do it. Well, that's resistance. But like Will's talking about, and he is a follower of Abraham Hicks. He's mentioned them before. And
oh, he is. Oh,
know,
okay.
Yeah. He's a great guy, and he sort of evolved over the years. I've heard him just, you know, quote them in other areas too. So this is that effortless stuff is really how it works. And that's why people get lost with it. You know, it's somehow there's this energy. How do I attract? And when I tell somebody you attract it, by stop trying. Your energy to attract it is the opposite. What you're doing is you're living as if that's what you have. Your emotions and gratitude are attached to that. I was actually on a panel the other day about, it was an addiction panel, but it sort of went off into the law of attraction. And we were talking about, and I really explained, and everybody responded real well to this. Positive thinking is not the point. Positive thinking, it leads you to the point. Positive thinking is, yeah, it's great. All day positive is great. It doesn't change anything, but it's great. It's a start, because a positive mindset, what you're doing is I'm living as if this is what I want in life. Then the positive thought to it is the emotion that you're attaching to how you're feeling. So the law of attraction responds to the vibrational emotions. The emotions have their own vibration. So positive is what you're reinforcing. It's the most simple to control. When you really live in a point of gratitude, you're feeling good. It's an overall view. So if you're viewing that, and I'm living the life that I'm living, I wake up every day, I have an abundance, I have great health, I have all this other stuff, I'm really positive about that, but I'm not spending my energy focusing on, okay, today I'm manifesting a bunch of money. No, but you're just saying I don't have it when you do that. And that's it's almost like when I know a couple that I was working with, not my.
Uh-oh.
We lost Joel.
Joel, where'd you go? Your voice went out.
Oh, no.
Oh, there you are.
Oh, there you are.
Yeah. You know, and so that was a really big moment for her. She's like, well, Joel, that's I really want to get pregnant. I go, yes, but stop with that. Go somewhere else. Let's look in a whole nother direction. Take your focus and energy of really desperately wanting to get pregnant, because you're desperate to do it. And, you know, we helped them develop a different mindset, real positive, what great parents we are, and all this other is just living with that, but stepping away from that. And within a month of them stopping really hard trying to get pregnant, she got pregnant with twins.
Ah, wow. Yeah.
Wow. Twins.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we overshot it a little bit, but within that, you know, you see that I hear all the time, but Walt and I had a call or an email probably 6 months ago, and the gentleman, really nice gentleman, was you know, thankful for the LOA today, and was talking about, he said, I don't know why I can't manifest more money in my life. He goes on to say, now all the other areas of my life that I'm not focusing on have improved greatly.
Which is a clue.
Hello.
And I was like, I said, well, you know, thank you again. You're like a self-cleaning oven. You answer your own question.
Right.
That's not a real hard bar to do in coaching right there. Dissect what you just said, and you have your answer. What you're not focusing on, his relationship improved, his job improved, everything but the money improved, but his energy was on the money. And so it's just, that's the thing you're putting out there, that your desperation for something is an energy that is actually the resistance. And that's the effortless manifestation is just truly having the courage and the ability to let go. First of all, identify it, live it, emotionally vibrate on that level, and move on. How it's going to be fulfilled, if I really believe that I have an abundance, I can't spend all day wishing for an abundance. It doesn't work that way.
That's true. Yeah, in fact, it's also one of the most frustrating things, really, when you come down to it, because you think that you're putting out the signal. Yeah, I want this great thing. I'm going to attract this really great thing. You don't think you're putting out lack, at least initially. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, after a while, you kind of get the feel that, yeah, it's a different vibration from the one of actually having it. But initially, that's not the way it feels. It feels like, yeah, I'm putting out there, you know, this is what I'm trying to attract into my life. And that can be pretty confusing.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's my world when once I stopped the focus on it being about money, and cause money was my struggle for many years. And, I changed and I learned about my energy vibration. And I started practicing law of attraction. Well, everything else in my life started, I was feeling better. I was able to defeat depression, anxiety, but yet I got to a point where I always had enough money, but it was always barely enough. And then I realized, okay, this is better, but what am I doing? Because 90% of my thoughts during the day unintentionally were about a lack of money. So mm-hmm. the resistance was there. I have a friend who's freakishly wealthy. He's close to worth $1 billion, and he money is nothing to him. He laughed the other day. He got some dividend from a company he invested in 3 years ago. He made like $17 million. He forgot what he had. He's, oh God, I forgot about that. I'm like, this is an awesome day.
Oh,
he made $17 million in something you forgot about, but his net worth didn't change any really because of that $17 million. So money is nothing to this guy, but
is
his relationship. well, trust me, he is, because that's his problem. It's the relationship stuff. It's just constant drama and all his energy is, I got to find the right woman. We got to be in the right situation. It's ironic. He ends up with the same woman. They have different names, but they look identical and all have the same behavior over and over. And he's always stressed out about it. And,
I know exactly what you mean. I have a friend that does the same thing, ends up with the same type of personality type of dude. And it's like, yeah.
you'll see that. It is really important when we engage in, understanding just what Will Smith talks about, what Abraham Hicks talks about. It's the other side of it, because you hear in the beginning, positive thinking. It is. It's a part of the process. It's part of the construction of how you tune in. And positive thinking, there's people who use the law of attraction equally effective in a negative manner, not mentioning any particular politician or anything. the negative energy can create a negative vortex as well. And it does, but once you learn to do either way, it's just a way to get the law of attraction to get you where you need to be or what you're wanting. So, but when you understand it, by attaching the emotion that you claim you're after to something, I have an abundance. I live in abundance. I have incredible health. I have a great life. I get up every day believing that. And now that doesn't mean that every day goes perfectly. That doesn't mean that there's challenges in every day. I understand all of that. I don't have to fight anymore, all that stuff. It just magically comes. And there, once you understand it, it changes how you do it. But that's why people who spend a lifetime, and you know, it might be all categories, but we have, I know people that have money challenges that always have money challenges. I know people that have relationship challenges that always have relationship challenges. It's just always the same. People have health challenges. They always do. I don't know if you watched the movie Heal. It's on Netflix. It's a documentary, actually. I really highly recommend it. It's basically law of attraction about health. And it gets into that. You know, it's people have these chronic stress-related conditions that they've been diagnosed with 50 different things over the past 20 years. And once they stop with the focus on that and focus on the health, focus on the getting rid of the stress, amazing, they have healing. So all that energy is, you know, that redundancy in what we face You got to find the resistance in it, and you know, effort. And not to take away from Will Smith's brilliant statement that he stole from Abraham Hicks. And if that does anger him, Will can actually email me, so we'll be good there. But it you know what you're doing. Real manifestation is always effortless. That's the answer. It's not. They didn't like, oh, here's a hack to it. No, this is how you really manifest. It's an effortless effort by putting the emotion matching what you're after.
So what do you think about what Neville Goddard used to teach about it, summed up in his phrase, assume the feeling of the wish fulfilled?
Yeah.
In other words, getting to that feeling place.
That's the point. The positive emotion is matching what you're trying to do. You're living as if.
Mm-hmm.
Early in my recovery from addiction, one of the first people that I had met is a sponsor. They call them the 12-step programs, and they give you advice, they talk to you, and they sort of walk you through everything. And one of the first things he told me, and I was a train wreck. My life was a train wreck at the time, in all areas. And if I found a new area to mess up, I was going to do that. So, trust me, this was a three ring circus would be an improvement. It was terrible. So he told me one day, he said, Joel, why don't you just act as if you're a normal, productive human being?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, first of all, that was a little insulting, but
sure.
But very, very accurate. And so I did. I instantly changed my perspective. I started to behave as if I were a normal and live like a normal participant in society, and started doing the right thing. And shockingly, that became the thing. Now he wasn't talking law of attraction, but that was the groundwork of me understanding how I could live as if. And, mm-hmm. and when you live as if, You what you want, that's how you bring it about. I have a young man, he's from, I don't know, some country, and he's a minority, and he has all these things, and he's been programmed with, here's a million reasons why. I think he's Indian, like really Indian, not locally. I mean, you know, like
right.
India.
From India.
Not locally. Not Native American, but Indian.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All those I insulted, please email Walt at loa.net for your complaint. So anyway, with that, he's a really nice guy, but he had all of these reasons why it wasn't going to work. You know, well, you know, I'm here on a certain kind of visa, and I can't do these things. These pressures of me, everybody stereotypes me, and I go, you're right, you can't. Mm-hmm. And then he didn't like that. He goes, well, I thought you were going to help me. I go, well, it's not my job. You got to help yourself. Mm. You can't, not because those are real things. You can't because those are the things you believe.
Right.
And once we started there, and then he really could do that, I said, do you know anyone in your family that has come over here and been successful? And he goes, well, all of them. I go, well, okay.
Wow.
I said, so, but you know, why are you, in fact, anything, you should, it should be this. Now, they have incredible, their family has an incredible work ethic. They come over and they will start like convenience stores, and they work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for a while. They build them up. They become successful. They open a new one, and if they have a system, and they work really hard, and
it's
great stuff. I said, so that energy that you're talking about, what it's all against you. It's almost like instantly that changed everything for him, because he was able to see it differently. Instead of listening to the narrative of what doesn't work, he listens to the reality of what can work, which is right in front of him. And that's what we got to look. Live as if. Effortless manifestation is how you manifest. That's Abraham Hicks's big stuff. It doesn't mean you can't passionately want something, but you got to live as if you want it. As you're having it already. You got to mm-hmm. live it like you can't wake up in the morning and check your bank balance and then worry about the next 50 bills you have to pay and somehow think that's manifesting wealth.
It's annoying though, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, why does it still say zero?
Yeah. Yes.
But why do you think it is that people have that one area? Because you, I mean, your example with your client who's their, you know, billionaire is a good example. Most of us who deal with a monetary issue can hardly even conceive of the idea of that being easy and relationships being hard, for instance.
Right.
But that's the way it tends to be. Why is it that we tend to get stuck on one thing like that that's completely different from what somebody else gets stuck on?
Well, there's multiple philosophical answers to that, but I'm going to keep it at the most simple thing.
Okay.
You know, because there's a train of thought that you almost always inherit the stuff. It's like why people who live in poverty tend to continue the trend of living in poverty. Mm-hmm. People that they buy into the narrative of poverty. When you know, and it's very offensive. And when people hear that, they're like, are you saying I'm choosing? And I'm like, well, in a sense you are. I know that sounds mean, but you're, it's not meant to be, but you are choosing that. And those are the concepts that when you get somebody to understand, it is very freeing. But you get a narrative over the years. You spend a lifetime. I know my mom's an example. She grew up in a severely abusive alcoholic family. She always, while they were very middle class, my grandfather worked very hard. He's also very, very much a severe alcoholic. And she was sort of kept in that system because she, in the addictive system, and always had to be quiet and not tell the truth and cover up lies and stuff as a child. And then she married somebody too early who was a compulsive gambler who gambled all their money away. So she lived in fear all of her whole life. She lived in fear of her family being discovered. Then she lived in fear of when my biological father gambled all the money away and she had two little kids with no way to pay or put food in the building. And then, you know, still dealing with my alcoholic grandfather. So she lived constantly in fear. So a lack of emotional security, a lack of financial security became her narrative. And she passed away 2 years ago. And she, even though my dad, who I consider my dad, who adopted me and later she married a great man, he had an abundance. But over the years, she still lived in lack, even though he had plenty of money. Everything was a fear-based stuff. It was always fear-based and always felt that, you know, she never had enough and it was just something that was programmed and she could never get out of it. She used to talk to me about, she said, well, son, you know, I worked really hard. I built my life up. I'll drive it. It drove her crazy that I had a car and a truck. She said, why do you have two vehicles? One of my cars is a Porsche. Why do you have a Porsche? I go, because I can, because I want it. And she thought that was incredibly wasteful.
Wow.
And she said, you need to save that money. And I go, I said, I have an abundance, Mom. I don't need that. I don't need to, I have a lot of money in savings and I have more money coming in, but she lived from a fear-based stuff. So it gets programmed.
Yeah.
And it's hard to unprogram it's like religion. You see people that are born into a particular religion and they're enmeshed in it for so long and it takes them, some people never leave that religion and other people I remember the first time that I had to, I'm a recovering Southern Baptist as well. And, one of the things that,
that's a great phrase.
Yeah.
Recovering Southern Baptist.
Yeah. And one of the things, well, I always felt sincerely that there was a God of some sort or energy of some sort. I felt that.
Mm-hmm.
But I never, even as a child, I was just like, I can't really buy into what you're telling me with all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a God. There's a God. I have that connection to something. But at the same time, when I try to filter what you're telling me here, that's something out there saying, no, not remotely right. So, but even as I grew and sort of discovered what I believe today, it was very hard. It was almost like, wow, have I been programmed wrong? Has my mom and dad been programmed wrong? It's really hard to step away from what you were programmed as a child as the absolute truth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really true. It's a strange thing too, that when we want to have something like that, we get in a place of just believing and disbelieving at the same time is the best way I can explain it. Because on the one hand, we want to believe, right? We really, really want to believe. And on the other hand, without realizing it, we're buying into that, you know, that lack syndrome and so forth. And when, if we get deeply into it, I mean, like with your mom, you get deeply into it like that, it can kind of take over and you don't even realize that it took over. I mean, that's what I got, the impression I got when you were telling that story, Joel, that she didn't even realize that that mindset had taken her over. It was just, she thought it was normal.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Yeah. Well, it, you know, you get conditioned in thinking and responding and it at some point it serves you and it seems to work for a while. And so you adapt that as a defense mechanism. And, you know, you'll always hear, well, I want to prepare for the worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. I want to do, well, yes, of course you do, because that you, somehow that seems protective. One of the statements, you know, that people often say to me, say, well, I'm really worried about something. And I go, well, that's working well for you.
You can always count on Joel to just lighten up your day, I tell you.
Well, but when you get him to see the absurdity of it, you know, worrying is truly like praying for what you don't want. Mm. It's just simply bringing about. And anxiety, I happen to believe, being in the field that I'm in, anxiety is the culprit behind so many things. First of all, that's that movie Heal I told you about on Flix. Netflix, but it's also anxiety is what trips up the law of attraction, because the anxiety is an emotion that is a vibration itself. And so the law of attraction goes, this person really loves anxiety. Let's give them a lot more. And that's how it works. And that's what most people, you know, so I'm worried about this or I'm worried about that, is almost always the underlying cause of the resistance. And anxiety is a very strong emotion that has a very specific chemical release within the body. Yeah. And it's such a, it can be debilitating, and it's sort of the go-to emotion that doesn't, it served us well years ago, when we were fighting the saber-toothed tigers and the dinosaurs, but it doesn't apply anymore.
Good thing too. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
One of the things that Cindy Chavez likes to point out, and I think she's absolutely spot on, is the idea that stress is really kind of like our politically correct term for fear. And that what's really going on whenever we're feeling stressed is feeling fear. So tying that into what you were talking about there, really any time that we're noticing that we're stressed, that's kind of a time to notice that not only are we feeling fear, but we're focusing on lack. And that may be that's one of the best ways to climb out of this little trap that we get ourselves into of not realizing that we're putting out the wrong signal.
And I love that statement. That's really solid. You know, the concept that, you know, there's a psychiatrist that said, I wish I could remember who said it, but I love this. He said, you know, the anxiety isn't about the future. It's not really even about the fear of the future. Anxiety is trying to control the future. Mm-hmm. It is when you put something out there, it's sort of like with the law of attraction. I want to manifest $1 million and I'm going to go do this. And it's like, okay, but why don't you just let it, I have $1 million. I have an abundance. I have everything I need, and let the universe fill that void and be open to all the signs, or I'm going to go do this, or I'm going to go do this. And that, you know, I know people that, I'm going to go win $100 million on the lottery this weekend. I said, well, I wonder if anyone else is thinking that as well. Or, you know, it's just like, it's just like, okay, you, within that, you're limiting the universe to, or the, you know, the manifestation process, you're limiting that to a 1 in 300 million chance. So you really place great restraints on the universe, and that's what. But when you allow an abundance to come, and you allow it to creep in, then it becomes huge momentum. And then one day you wake up and $17 million appears in your bank account, and you're like, huh, where did that come from? And that's how it works.
Yeah.
That must have resonated with you, Alex, because you've mentioned previously that you've been diagnosed with anxiety and that you've been dealing with that. The whole idea of anxiety being worrying about the future, that sounds like it makes sense to you.
Yeah, it definitely does. But it's hard because it's like the chemicals in your brain want you to do one thing, but at the same time, like, you're aware of law of attraction. So you're like, this too shall pass. You know, I need to trust and surrender and just relax and everything will be fine. But your brain is a whole nother monster. And it's like, nah, that's not what we're doing today. Not today.
Alex, yeah. And one thing that you said there, everybody said this. So here's, and apologize for acting, I'm not telling you how to live, but that brings up a great example here. Mm-hmm. When you tell your brain to relax, you're saying, okay, I'm really anxious, so relax. Versus there's a way to do it that actually the first time I spoke to a large group of people, there were 5,000 people in the audience. They were all mm-hmm. in the medical field and I'm mm-hmm. about to go talk about some crazy stuff. And I look out there and I'm going, they're going to think I'm crazy. And they were right. I mean,
we can't deny that. I mean,
so they were accurate in their diagnosis with that. But however, I felt intimidated by that crowd. And, you know, one of the guys backstage was, there was a panel of speakers and I was one of the earlier speakers and, the headline guy came up. He said, Joel, he said, you're great at what you do. He said, what's your, and I said, I'm really anxious. I said, I'm going to probably mess this up. And he goes, anxiety appears and chemically, it's the same thing. It's the same thing as excitement. Anxiety physically is manifest. It's in the body. It's the same. Mm-hmm. If you measure the stress chemicals from anxiety and excitement, they almost appear identical, but one has a negative effect and one doesn't, because excitement is something that you view as a positive. And for whatever reason, that moment, that exact moment when he told me that, I changed my, I'm really excited to be here. And, mm-hmm. and it worked. It's something that I carried over these years. So instead of telling myself, I said, wow, I'm really excited about my future. I used to mistake this for anxiety, but I'm really excited about this great stuff happening. And the body didn't perceive, okay, well, yes, I mean, let's fulfill that excitement by fulfilling with great stuff. And it is a life hack that works for many people. And by the way, I'm not minimalizing, like you're saying, years of conditioning in that anxiety state takes years to change for many people. I mean, it's really hard to stop the brain from doing a conditioned response. It perceives itself as protecting you. That's why it's doing it. It's not trying to harm you, but it's mm-hmm. the brain is saying, Alex, we're here for you. We want you to worry about all this. And that way you're somehow protected. And it's not the case, but that's what we've used it for all these years.
Right.
So when you when you're feeling anxious, Alex, does it feel excited? I mean, does it have a similar vibration to excitement in your experience, or does it feel different?
Sometimes it feels different, but I get exactly what Joel's saying about how, because when I was younger, I used to say, "Oh, I'm so anxious for this concert," or "I'm so anxious for this," you know, not realizing there's a difference between anxiety and excitement, but. What I meant was, I can't wait for this to happen. I'm so excited. So I totally get what you're saying about that. But yeah, it's definitely a different feeling to be excited about something. And then, you know, cause it's not even, how do I explain it? It's not even it's not like you can explain in words, like how it feels, because your body's going through all these emotions and physical changes during the attack itself. And then all of a sudden you just can't control it. Whereas right. excitement, you know, is you can explain that. You can explain how you feel.
Right. Right. And you're exactly right. Once you start, and that's why the conditioning to change it to excitement and you can't automatically go, I'm super excited now instead of anxious and stop this anxiety attack. I mean, it doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it did.
So I'm not trying to minimize the severity of what you're talking about, but I am saying that you can condition yourself over time to not allow yourself to get to that point by, so if you look at it as an anxiety attack is or a stress attack is a ramp up of where you become overwhelmed with your own thoughts and you get stuck in your prefrontal cortex of thinking where you're just not even rationally thinking about things.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When you're at that point, this excitement thing doesn't work.
No.
It's way back there. It's way early in the process when you're building and when something comes up, and you're like, okay, I have this coming up. Then you're able to, really step out, really excited about this. And then eventually you can change it. But this isn't something that when you're already there is going to be very effective. But it's sort of like, you know, the reframing. I've had what, you know, if anybody would define as real traumas in my life, as we all have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what works best for me is understanding that my trauma, is simply a perspective event.
Uh-oh, we lost Joel again.
Who's his phone carrier?
I don't know. Joel, I think you need another carrier. That's all. Different internet connection. This isn't working. Here he comes.
Okay, did you hear me? I'm sorry. I have no idea what happened. I think my phone rang for some reason. I don't know.
That'll do it.
Yeah, every time.
So we lost all that part, the way the phone was ringing.
Okay, well, that's fine. All right, so anyway, so with, you know, my perspective on trauma takes place when I'm able, how I go with that is I get to choose whether something was a trauma or not. I didn't know that a long time. Because how you view something. I had an event when I was a real quick event. I won't go into the whole story, but I was really desperate. I was homeless in Las Vegas and I had no food. I was starving. I ate out of the trash can. I slept with it really rough time. Well, later in my life, a crazy chain of events made that event very relevant. It made it wow. In fact, it was a necessary event. So I was able to retroactively go back in time and change my perspective of the eating out of the trash can process. And actually, while I'll never view it as a great day, it was an event that had to happen for a certain other event to happen in my life. So I'm able to change that perspective. And so we, in a sense, we can do that with anxiety or what's going on, but it's about working with your own brain and undoing years of conditioning that's the piece. That's the hard part. That's where the resistance is. So I'm not minimalizing, you know, everybody's stuff. Somebody posted the other day on I was posting about exercise and anxiety and depression. And a very angry post, was about, you know, I have, the post was, don't tell me to go exercise. I have clinical depression and something anxiety, you know, a diagnosed anxiety disorder, but in a very angry way. And I said, well, first of all, I wasn't telling you to do anything. I'm telling you what works for me. So you do what you need to do. And second, it isn't like, you know, the fact you're owning that, well, I'm not saying it will work for you. I clearly cured myself of depression and anxiety totally by doing exactly what I'm telling you. Now, I'm not saying it's going to work for you, but at the same time, don't go on me like I'm, you know, we even talked about you. This person was protecting their, like, you're telling me to exercise. I go, I'm not telling you anything. I'm saying this worked for me. And there's a difference. Your perspective in that is very important. And I'm like critical of where she's at. Her journey is her journey.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people will defend their stuff to the point, instead of addressing it, they'll defend it like, oh, there is no answer for me. So you're angering me by suggesting there is.
Well, I think with that, it comes across as, not that there was anything wrong with it. I think your approach to that question was actually correct. Whereas other people are, you know, they assume things and they're like, instead of saying, well, this is what worked for me, they're saying, oh, you should try exercise because for this reason, this reason, this reason, but not because it worked for me. They don't, right. They forget to put that in there. So it right. makes it seem like you're doing everything wrong except for this.
Right. And I completely agree with that. My whole everything in life is simply about me. This is what worked for me. I'm the ultimate believer in something called bio-individuality. I do not believe that everything works for everybody. I don't judge other people on what they've been through. I don't I've been on my own journey. I have seen there's a million ways to get to where we need to be. I offer a path that worked for me. It is in no way judging another person's path. I don't. Mm-hmm. I learned that. If you try to judge my path, wow. Yeah, we got a lot going on there. So yeah, it's that's sort of the point is how you present it. It's when you, that's what I believe worked for me. But somehow somebody gets angry. So, well, your depression is not as bad as mine, so that's why it worked for you. It's like,
well that's yeah. just as bad. That's like,
exactly.
that's diminishing your depression. Like,
right.
You can't say this is how depression is for me. That's how you're supposed to say it.
Right. I've had 3 suicide attempts in my life. I've taken a fatal dose of pills. I've poisoned myself with carbon monoxide and survived that. And I forget what the other one. Oh yeah. Cut myself. And none of those were, you know, thank God none of those were quote unquote successful. But to say, oh, but by the way, your depression was not as bad as mine is you don't know my story as I don't know your story.
Right.
So it's almost you can get in a position of being stuck on things that become irrelevant. It within the addiction, I worked with a lot of addiction, and within addiction, one of the things I found amazing, is I will have people that get into these ridiculous arguments about is addiction a disease or not?
Yes, that's people, common. A lot of people talk about that.
Yeah.
I hear all that and I say, and I'll have people say, want to argue with me. I go, I don't care. Why does it matter? Why the name? Why do we have, you're doing something that's not great for you and you will die if you don't stop. So let's stop arguing the minutia and let's address what's going on with you. And,
right.
But that's the thing that happens. We get way off track where we're at and then we got to come back to where we need to be. Our individual journeys and what works for you and not getting caught up in all the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so easy to get caught up in a lot of the stuff. Isn't it interesting how there's a perfect example of how two people dealing with a similar situation, in this case the example was depression, two people dealing with depression can actually fight their way to the bottom. Like, no, my depression is worse than your depression.
Right.
You know, as if that was somehow going to make it better.
Here?
Yeah. That'll make things all better. If my depression can beat your depression, I will be so much better off.
Well, yeah, I'd be I'm sorry, what's the prize here?
Yeah, exactly. What's the point? And that's where, in my office, I was been a year or two ago, and I had this family, and one of my topics is victimhood and how you get stuck in the role of victim.
Mm-hmm.
Within the family unit, you'll often see, you know, one child, you say there's 4 or 5 children in the family, and there's this one child that always feels he or she is the victim. And, so I was working with this family, this one member of the family was just very much a victim. Everybody was out to get this person. And this person in the middle of our meeting literally stood up, pounded my table and goes, I don't want anybody to forget I'm the victim here.
Wow.
God, wow.
And I go,
self-proclaimed victim. Got it.
I said, noted and agreed. And that's the answer to this whole problem. You have accepted and embraced the victim role. And you go, no, don't turn this on me. And I go, oh, of course you're the victim. Nothing can be turned on.
That's right.
And so it was the most definitive moment. And it actually helped the parents to see, oh my God, we have bought into this. We've treated this child as a victim, and they're behaving as a victim. And now that the person is time to launch in the world and try to go do things, is debilitated by our treating this person as a victim. One of the most awesome things that I've ever experienced in my life was years ago, I used to work in group homes, and I used to have managed several different group homes. And one of the things we would go talk to families who had disabled children. And you'd go into the community and say, look, we offer these services that, you know, and especially when the kids get older and like in the teenage years are hard to deal with often. And so we got a referral to this lady, and she lived in a poor part of town, and she had three kids. And we showed up at her house, and I said, you know, I'm so-and-so, and you know, I work for so-and-so group home, and we wanted to let you know that social services recommend we come talk to you. We have a home not far from here. She goes, okay, why are you here? And I go, well, for your son. She goes, well, what's wrong with my son? And I'm like, well, I mean, you know, I see your son, and I, how do you, he has no legs. And I'm like, well, you know, he has some physical disabilities. And as I'm watching her talk to him, she interrupts. Now, she had him, this sounds cruel to people, but I will make a point to say it. He was mopping the kitchen floor by sitting on this mop head and pulling himself along the floor.
Wow.
And she said, you missed a spot. And I was like, oh my God. Okay. And at first I was like, sort of like, wow, this is not in the right direction. And then I realized after watching her interaction, she told her brother, you guys need to go play basketball. Take your brother and you guys go play basketball. They put their brother on the back. They walked down the basketball court. And she goes, now what are you guys here for?
No. And I go, never mind.
We're at the wrong place. I apologize. Well, she did not treat that child any different than the rest
right.
of the kids. If that child, and again, different times, but if that child needed a slipper upside the head, he probably got a slipper upside the head. I didn't see that, but all the kids got slippers upside the head. So it's probably what happened. And the kid didn't view, and he's a very functional kid. He just lacked legs. And now we did hook him up eventually with some prosthetic legs. That worked out great. But the point was, she wasn't viewing it, and the kid didn't view himself as a victim. And he had just as many chores as the other boys. They would get in fights, and nobody ever said, by the way, your brother has no legs. It didn't matter.
Right. And that's how the world should be.
It is. And this was an amazing, resilient lady. And it dawned on me. I go, why are we here? It started my journey of understanding. Wow. I wish everybody was that. And again, I'm not about, anyway, if people need assistance, there's no way I'm suggesting they don't. But don't debilitate them by stopping them from achieving what they're able to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with a kid who has developed that perspective with the help of his mom, apparently, that perspective that he was a perfectly normal kid.
I was just going to say that. It's all about perspective.
His perspective did it.
Yeah. And all of this is about perspective. So when we talk about how anxiety becomes entrenched in where we're at, it very much is an effective sort of thought to see, yes, this was a perspective that was handed down generationally. It was a coping mechanism that often is, you know, you'll see that families that worry tend to worry, and, you know, moms that worry tend to pass that down. And there's that energy vibration I talk about is very real. And when you're around anxious people, you unintentionally are programming, you're picking up that energy. Best example I have, I was driving through, with my son, Chris, my middle son, Chris. We were in the middle of North Carolina, and I was going through this unbelievable storm. I mean, I could barely see, and it was terrible. And Chris looked over at me and he goes, are we going to be okay? I was like, well, I don't understand. He goes, of course we're going to be okay. Well, I was up on the steering wheel. I was really intense. He picked up on my anxiety as we're driving through the thunderstorm. Mm-hmm. And he, I didn't realize I was putting that out there. And so I relaxed my posture and took a deep breath, and then he was okay. But the energy I was putting out was making him anxious. Well, imagine spending a lifetime with that energy and then trying to deprogram it or reprogram it or remove it later on. That's how it happens.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It's amazing how we have such an impact on people. I mean, there's an example of having an impact on somebody without even saying anything.
Yeah.
Just done through body language.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. And body language and that energy vibration. I may have mentioned this on the show before. The quickest I can tell the story, my mom was at my, visiting my sister. She used to go sit with the dogs all day. While my sister went to work before my mom passed away a couple years ago. And she would go there. My sister had this bulldog. It was very, like, you know, real rough and tough, cool, very cool little bulldog. And you know, and then I stopped in. My sister was working. I was visiting in Florida, and I stopped in to visit my mom. And the dog was sitting in her lap, and my mom used to rock all day and chew the side of her lip and read. I'm looking at the dog, and the dog's just shaking.
Mm.
I'm like, what is going on? And I realized my mom is probably the most anxiety-filled person I've ever met. She spent every day looking for things to worry about. And the poor dog became this anxiety-filled mess just by picking up on her energy. And she had no clue. And dogs are very receptive to your energy.
Yes, they are.
Very receptive. And so – that's why I think that you know, you saw that and that, you know, I was almost, if I could have filmed it, I would have as an example. It really would have not gone over well with my mom. But it was so evident that dog was just clearly sitting there all day with my mom. Just whatever my mom's worry would be, it just would pop into her head. She worried all day, every day for years.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And you know a little bit about the receptiveness of dogs, Alex, because you got two of them as service dogs. And
yes.
Their job is to do exactly that, right?
Well, the thing is about Rusty is once I had my breakdown, I moved in with my mother, and then we got Rusty. So Rusty became accustomed to my situation growing, you know, from a puppy stage. So my anxieties became his anxieties. He was totally fine in thunderstorms. Once he realized I wasn't okay in a thunderstorm, then all of a sudden he's like, oh no, we don't do thunderstorms.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. That is the best example ever right there. That's perfect.
And then also on the flip side of it, when I had my brain surgery and then the side effect was seizures, I started having seizures. Then he noticed I was starting to have seizures. So I don't know how he knows ahead of time, but he does notify me, you know, okay, you're about to have a seizure. You have about 10 to 20 minutes to get somewhere soft where you're not going to hit your head. And he just did it automatically just by being by my side at all times. And he does not leave my side, like, at all.
Wow. And that goes so deep how they can pick up on all of that. We are energy. That's all mm-hmm. we are. Mm-hmm. And dogs pick up, animals pick up. I didn't know all that about it. Alex, congratulations on just being so in tune with all that. But and congratulations to the dog. What an awesome dog to be able to do that. where you know, I have a friend that has a cat that I'm convinced she posts stuff all the time. And this cat picks up, this is getting way out there, picks up like spirits or whatever, because it'll be in the room.
Oh yeah, they do that.
Yeah, yeah. Start looking at it, like it's like one moment it gets, you know, riled up and hisses at the wall, and then mm-hmm. the next moment it goes in there, sort of rubs up against the wall, and it's like, wow, I wish I could see what that cat was seeing, but it was a normal cat. It's just they're much more in tune because they haven't blocked it out. I mean, we've been told none of that's real, so mm-hmm. we you know, I think we have shut it out of our filter and we don't see it either. Yeah. And humans aren't as intuitive either of that stuff, I believe. But it the energy vibration of when you can live your energy and that you're trying to do is when you can, then that's when your energy matches and is congruent with what you're seeking through the law mm-hmm. of attraction. That's the $1 million answer right there.
And that's part of what we try to teach on a regular basis, which is kind of odd because I've only since doing the podcast been able to get to the point where I start experiencing stuff primarily through my co-hosts and them teaching me and showing me what they know and so forth. Linda Armstrong in particular has helped me really connect in many ways where energy is concerned. And so I actually get to the point where now I'm feeling it. But I have to admit there were times I felt like I was kind of a fraud because I'm talking about all this stuff with people and I was never, ever feeling any of it. Yeah. So you just made me feel a little bit better, Joel, that, well, yeah, of course, we're programmed not to feel it. So I'm on the right track.
Yeah. Well, and that's part of the journey. You instinctively knew this is the correct thing. You instinctively knew what we're doing is correct. Mm-hmm. However, you have conditioned the other way. And so the idea that you were going along with it, I've watched over the last couple, however long we've been doing it together, Walt, just incredible understanding and change. You always knew it was right. And my evolution, I used to say I'm a kindergartner in all this. I'm just learning. And, I'm probably, I don't know, I might even be in 10th grade by now, but at that point, you know, there's still a lot of stuff and, but sort of it becomes so part of you. And then it becomes your new way of thinking, and that's what that energy is. It, my job or my feeling is, I'm not there to make you see it my way. I can say here's what's worked for me, and I'm also very open to the idea of here's what works for me, because what you're believing works is what works, and that's the exciting piece. It doesn't always have to be the same thing. That's why I have friends that do tuning forks and stuff, you know, vibrational mm-hmm. stuff for the body, mm-hmm. all great stuff. And they're like, well, here's, and I'm like, okay, it's great. I don't know if I could sit there for 45 minutes while you tune me with the fork, but, you know, my ADD is not going to allow that to happen, but, one day maybe.
One day maybe. Yeah. Oh, that's funny. That's really good. Well, I think a lot of it has to do with what works for you. I mean, you eloquently talk about the things that work for you were based on your struggles, the things that you've dealt with in your life that were, I mean, you outlined a number of them here, dealing with the homelessness, dealing with, you know, not having food, having to just scavenge for food wherever you could find it and so forth. And those became, in a sense, your methods. It became your methods to understand and to learn how to appreciate how life really works, not the way that we're taught, not the nose to the grindstone thing that actually ends up leading us astray much of the time, but the connecting to who you are, what you're thinking about, what you're feeling about. So, I mean, can I say that was a particular method? I mean, it's not a method I'd recommend to somebody else, but it was your method.
You take what you're dealt and you develop your method with that. That's why people get frustrated because it can't all be. Alex and I have very different backgrounds. Yet we sort of and we very different ways we dealt with similar things, mm-hmm. but we arrive at the same place, and that's mm-hmm. the hard part. You know, like I learned to flip struggle upside down. I use struggle as a tool. Struggle is great for me. Struggle makes me stronger. I'm strengthened by my struggle. Not everybody can go through that. Not everybody's able to frame it that way. Mm-hmm. I will use anxiety as motive. I don't get anxious any longer. I now am excited and I use that to power me. It's sort of like in the keto diet. You're using fat for energy. Mm-hmm. In the anxiety diet, I turn anxiety into energy, or I don't allow it to be a defeating mechanism since it's creating a fight or flight response in my body. If I do have something like that, I set it up where I go fight in a positive way using that energy. And that mm-hmm. doesn't work for everybody. There's by no means that's the bio-individuality, and it's so important to respect everyone's process. I am in no position to judge another human being of how they deal with stuff. I mean, Lord knows, I did a lot of stuff that didn't work too. But I am always excited to share what did work for me.
Yes.
And hopefully it relates to some people. And those that it does, dismiss it, don't use it. It's just about everybody comes at it from a different way. There's a million ways to get here. And I'm just suggesting one of them, but it helps develop, or you take a hybrid of people's suggestions. It's like I've heard a law of attraction guy say, well, I was really disappointed because I believed in exactly what Abraham Hicks said, and it, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, well, you're taking it all literal. You got to take what works for you and then let go of what doesn't.
That's an important point to end on. So, well, this has been good as usual. I mean, the conversations we have, Joel, and now with Alex are just fabulous. And I love every single one of them. Before we go, I want to make sure I put a couple messages out there. First of all, if you're not yet a subscriber, please become one. The instructions are on the homepage, loatoday.net. You just click the link there and it walks you right through it. And share the fact that you're listening as well so that more people can get their daily doses of happy. And Joel, how do people reach out to Joel Elston, the coach, in case they want to get a little personal assistance?
JoelElston.com is my website, or JoelElston@gmail is my email. I'd love to hear from all our listeners.
That sounds good.
Always try to respond back.
And Alex, what's happening on Spoiler Alert? Anything new that people need to know about on your podcast?
Well, there's a lot of season finales and a lot of TV show renewals for second seasons for, freshman shows.
Okay. Yes. So something more to tune into. Very good. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, then we'll leave it at that. Thank you to our few live stream listeners who found us on YouTube once I figured out how the recording portion worked. But, you know, I'm still figuring that part out. We'll get that part ironed out. But thank you to you guys. Thanks also to our podcast listeners, because that's where the vast majority of our listeners are. And without them, we wouldn't have a podcast. So thank you very much. And we will see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.